Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, we're reacting to the budget just a couple of hours after the Chancellor sat down after delivering his speech in Westminster. What is the state of the economy as we emerge, perhaps, from the pandemic, but stumble into a long year ahead of higher prices and taxes? We'll round up the changes and what they might mean for you. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, has delivered his latest budget to Parliament, presenting an overwhelmingly positive vision of the UK economy. But even before he sat down, the wrangling had begun, with many questioning whether his halcyon view matched with reality. So where does the truth lie? To help me answer that and to discuss what the budget means for you, I'm joined by Tom Stevenson, Investment Director here at Fidelity. Tom, before we get into some of the detail of what's in the budget today, what about my point there? Did the Chancellor get the mood right in his speech today?
Hi, Ed. Yeah, I don't think he did, to be honest. I think it was an incredibly boosterish speech. I mean, the Chancellor actually sounded a lot more like the Prime Minister in terms of his delivery. Everything was hunky-dory. Everything was fine about the economy. And I think for many people watching or listening to his speech, that won't chime with their experience of how they feel about the economy, about their personal household finances as we pull out of the pandemic. It feels a lot more difficult for reasons that I'm sure we'll come on to discuss. And so for the Chancellor to be saying that everything is great just felt a bit wrong to me.
Indeed. Okay, well, we'll get into some of the details here. I'm going to say that we're recording just a couple of hours after the budget was delivered, so there's always a chance that further details emerge. It's always the way with the budget. A huge document, many documents, in fact, are published, and people go through those, and some important stuff can emerge in the days after. But based on what we know, Tom, what did the Chancellor say about the state of the economy?
Yeah, well, I mean, a budget speech always starts with that sort of assessment of the state of the economy. And what he said was that the economy is in pretty good shape, considering where it's come from. It's recovering well from the pandemic. And I think he's actually right to say that. I think in a way he's been a bit lucky with the pace of recovery. The Office for Budget Responsibility upgraded its forecast for near-term growth this year from 4% to 6.5%, which is a massive uplift in growth. And that, of course, has had a knock-on positive impact on the public finances. It sort of stabilised the economy. I mean, yes, debt levels are very high and the government is still borrowing a lot and will continue to borrow a lot more than it did before the pandemic. But it's by no means anything like as bad as we maybe would have feared 18 months ago or even just 6 months ago. It has improved a lot in the last 6 months.
Yeah, and the Chancellor talked about the point at which we've recovered the losses from the pandemic, and he said that GDP is going to be back where it was at the start of next year, or the turn of the year, I think he said. That was a positive. Wages were a positive. Unemployment was a positive. Borrowing was a positive. I guess the one area that's maybe the most relevant and the most on people's minds is inflation, right? And he sort of spoke to that a little bit, didn't he?
Yes, I mean, he went into quite a lot of detail actually at the start of his speech about inflation, and he tried to sort of set it in context and to, if you like, sort of to pin the blame on rising inflation on things that are going on in the outside world. And to an extent, of course, he's right. You know, I mean, we are a victim. There's not much we can do about the mismatch between supply and demand in various goods, which is pushing prices up. And indeed, there's not much we can do about the energy situation, which is pushing gas prices up. So he's right about that. But he did make a very important point about inflation, which is that it is going to average about 4%. Over the next year or so. Now, when you consider that inflation is currently 3.1%, that is telling us that at some point over the next year or so, inflation is probably going to exceed 5%. So very early on in his speech, he was absolutely clear that inflation is more entrenched, more long-lasting probably than we had considered relatively recent.
Yeah, and we're going to come to whether he has or can do anything about that with his announcements. Listen, I guess we already knew some of the big changes that were going to happen in this budget. We had a spending review a couple of months ago, and that included big changes on national insurance and corporation tax. Were there anything today, Tom, was there anything today to rival those in terms of significant announcements?
Well, I mean, we had a torrent of announcements. I mean, that's the Chancellor's style. I mean, I think it's most Chancellor's style.
It is,
actually. they tend to flood us with a torrent of numbers, which are all very different. They cover different time periods. They're totally not comparable. And the effect is that they just wash over you and your eyes glaze over, and that is, of course, the desired effect. But one of the consequences of the short-term improvement in the growth rate is that the Chancellor's actually got a bit more firepower than maybe he thought, and he has used that to throw a lot of money at lots of different parts of the economy. He talked about spending on infrastructure, on innovation, for example. It's very difficult, especially just a couple of hours after the speech, to actually get a real sense of the real significance of those spending measures. But there were many
dozens
and dozens of measures in all parts of the economy.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, I was thinking about what we would talk about here. We did have some changes targeted at the lowest paid people. So we had an increase in the minimum wage to £9.50 an hour. We knew that was going to happen because it was trailed in the press. We also had this change, kind of a complicated change to how universal credit is going to work. So I think this is to do with how universal credit reduces when you get into work. It's going to become more generous.
Yes, absolutely right. And an interesting number that I came across in the coverage of the budget just now, actually, that's only 40% of the people who receive universal credit actually are in any kind of work. So it's only a minority of people receiving universal credit who will actually benefit from this. The mechanism is this: essentially, for every pound that you earn in work, your universal credit is currently reduced by 63 pence, which is quite a disincentive for people to actually get back into work. And the Chancellor recognised that this is a disincentive. So what he's done is he's shifted that offset from 63 pence to 55 pence, which is a pretty generous offset. It is more of an incentive for people to get back into work. So obviously that's welcome.
Yeah, and there were some changes around things like business rates. There weren't the big business rate changes that some had been calling for. They were sort of tinkering with the system to advantage some businesses in the economy, right?
Yes, and I think that description of sort of tinkering around the edges is true of a lot of the measures. And this is always the way with budgets, that because there's a bit of tinkering and you look at it and you think, oh, that looks interesting, it takes a few days actually for the significance of these things to come through.
Indeed. So does any of this, Tom, address the big challenge of the economy? We've mentioned it before, but it's rising prices, right? I mean, that's how people are going to feel the economy in the next few months and maybe as long as a year. The Chancellor seemed to say, as you mentioned, that this is going to be here for a while longer. He also globalised this problem, didn't he? He said that these are issues in the global supply chain, there's issues with the global energy market that he can't sort out as the Chancellor of the UK. Maybe finance ministers can get together internationally to come up with some remedies. But if you're at home looking at your gas bill or your bill from the supermarket, your receipt from the supermarket or filling up at the petrol station, that doesn't fill you with much hope, does it? Because it's basically saying, look, hunker down, guys, we can't do much about this. And as we've seen from the other measures, barring what we've said about the lowest paid, there isn't much here to help families, is there?
No, and I think, you know, if you went into today thinking that, you know, your income is a bit lower because taxes are rising, you know, taxes are you know, relative to the economy, standing at a post-war high, really. We are a highly taxed country. Mm-hmm. If you're feeling that you're overtaxed and that the cost of living is going up for all the reasons that you mentioned, petrol, food, gas bills, I think you will end today feeling exactly the same. I think you will feel that nothing has changed. And for me, that feels like the opportunity of this budget that was dodged by the Chancellor. I think that, you know, he said, look, these are global problems. There's nothing much we can do about it. That, of course, you know, actually conveniently forgets the fact that, you know, a lot of these supply chain issues are not global problems. They are specifically around the changes that have occurred because of Brexit. And of course,
or made worse or made more difficult to solve.
Absolutely right. So I think that you will end today thinking that actually, if you were worried about your household finances, at the beginning of the day, I don't think you're going to end the day feeling any better about them.
No, and to repeat the point, you know, the one thing the government can control in that situation is the tax that it takes from people. It's going to take more tax from people in the form of this national insurance rise. Yes, it was announced a couple of months ago, but that probably is, you know, in any normal budget, that would be the headline news from this budget. But because of the way it's been released, it didn't work out like that. And people may think about, you know, these rising prices, and they'll hear the government say, well, you know, these are global factors. But they might ask, well, why are you taking more national insurance from me?
Yes. And I think tax and this chancellor is a very interesting equation, because the chancellor at the end of the speech made a very big point about saying, look, you know, I am temperamentally, philosophically a low tax conservative. I want to reduce taxes. I don't want to be doing all of this, but circumstances are such that I have had no choice. But just trust me, you know, before the next election, in 2 or 3 years' time, I'm going to be in a position to start cutting taxes again. So it was a kind of jam tomorrow promise from the Chancellor. You know, I want to be a tax-cutting Chancellor, and I will be. You're just going to have to trust me.
Yeah, indeed. Just finally, Tom, because I thought about whether to ask you this question or not, but, you know, you and I have covered many, many budgets, spoken about them and written about them for many years. How useful do you think this entire exercise is? Not the budget, but the theatre of budget day, given that, as we've been saying, there's so many other important economic announcements in the calendar these days. You know, the tax day, the spending review, measures are leaked so often in advance now. How valuable is it to have the Chancellor stand up and make these speeches? Or actually, how much of a distraction and stage management is it, really?
Well, I think distraction is the word. And I have to say, Ed, I did find myself today being a little irritated by the theatre of the whole thing, because it just felt to me, you asked me at the beginning, when we started, we talked about whether the Chancellor struck the right tone. And I think he didn't. I think he was tin-eared, really. I think he was not sensitive to the difficult mood in the country, and the way that the speech is presented with this torrent of numbers which no one can possibly understand. You know that really it's going to take you a couple of days of sort of analysing the Red Book and reading about it in the papers before you really get a sense of what it's actually all about. It does feel very theatrical.
Yeah, and when he was saying you know, all these positive things, you were thinking, well, the people affected by it, you know, it was all great for business. Well, does business feel in a good position at the moment? Really, their tax rates are going up. They've been hammered in all sorts of ways. You know, our personal taxes are going up. It might sound a bit hollow, what the Chancellor said today.
Yes, I think so. And you have to remember that this is politics, of course, and so there's other stuff going on here. You know, the Chancellor is an ambitious man. You know, everyone knows that, you know, he would like at some point to be moving next door. So you know that a lot of what he's doing is keeping his backbenchers in line, the people that in due course will probably vote for him. So there's politics going on as well, even beside the economics and the personal finances.
Okay, well, Tom, on a very busy day, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Ed.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.